This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We got some speedy drivers in our audience.
Scofflaws. Yeah. We got an audience full of scofflaws.
We do. We'll get to more.
But also quite a few law enforcement officers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Guys all together in a mixer.
What was the, we'll read some more of the speeding ticket stories in a little bit. What's been the general consensus about your question? Are end of month speeding ticket quotas a real or are they a myth?
The vast majority, pretty much everybody that responded, all the law enforcement officers said, yeah, that's a myth. It used to be a thing, but they've crushed it. But a few of them said, you never know in small towns. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, that it's not a deal.
Yeah.
They'll have averages they're supposed to keep up and everything, but it's not a month-by-month thing.
Okay. So it's a myth.
So it's a myth that at the end of the month, you might be more likely to get one. So.
Yeah, duly noted.
That's what they claim.
Right.
And with something with a digital record.
You know, in this...
All it's been proven to me is that you guys know how to cover your asses.
Exactly right.
So that makes sense. No, I guess now I can remember reading stories about, like, various departments getting in trouble for having quotas.
Yeah. So we're going to hit Cam Smith in this segment. We're going to hit Cam Robinson in the next segment. You also got some love from a person on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. That in a single segment, or at least within two segments of each other, we had Cam Smith, Cam Robinson, and you even mixed in a Cam Akers reference, and you stayed on point on all of them. You didn't get any of them. Like, you didn't mix last names.
I didn't mix up any of them.
Nope. Oh, yeah.
I'll get three, actually.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah.
Give him one more, Ben, just for good measure. There you go.
I should have done a Cam Neely reference at some point.
You
just to show off. Yeah.
That Cam Akers one got you out pretty far over your skis. I was very impressed by that. You know,
yeah, but at the same time, I admitted it, last Friday, I mixed up Lakin Tomlinson and Ed Ingram just because Lakin Tomlinson, because his name is Lake, it makes me think of the Land of a Thousand Lakes.
Yeah,
and I was thinking of Lakin Tomlinson as the guard that came via Minnesota, where obviously no, that was Ed Ingram.
That was Ed Ingram.
So I'm dialed in today, trying to make up for or atone for last Friday.
We'll get to some Texan stuff in the next segment. So opening day this Thursday, very excited. Over the course of the next couple of days, we're going to find out if indeed the improbable happens. Cam Smith making the opening day roster. I don't know what I would have handicapped it at the beginning of spring training, but very low.
1%.
Yeah.
That was the going rate. Listen, I defer to a lot of the smart baseball folks a lot of the times when it comes to stuff like this. And all the smart baseball people were telling me like, tah, scoff. That's what it would do. You know when you're watching with the subtitles on,
mm-hmm.
and somebody makes a face and in the subtitle it says scoffs.
Yes.
That's
little brackets around it.
Yeah. That's
italics.
What the closed caption said on our YouTube stream.
Scoffs.
And I cited smart baseball people who scoffed at the notion that Cam Smith, with all of his 5 or 10 games of double-A experience, would be on the opening day roster.
1% then. What percent do you think it is now that he makes? You think it's a coin flip?
I still think it's... I think it's 40% chance.
40%.
And it's partly because DiCenzo has played so well.
Yeah.
If there were no DiCenzo, then it would be easier to say, all right, yeah, we'll get Cam Smith up and there'll be plenty of opportunities for him to play. But DiCenzo has done the same thing Cam Smith has done, which is he's produced at the plate in spring training. He's adapted to playing corner outfield really well for a guy that hadn't done it before. And one thing Espada said last week, and he said multiple times before, is that these guys got to get, they got to play every day. So I just, I feel like if there were no DeZenzo, then Cam Smith would be very likely. I think at this point, if one of those two guys is going to be up, they defer to just more old school baseball logic and say, hey, let's get Cam Smith time to get comfortable playing pro baseball, get him more time in Double A, and DeZenzo's already had a taste of the major leagues and way more pro baseball experience. We'll start off with DeZenzo.
He would be
and
the
still, and then get him an opportunity to play a lot more freely.
Yeah, he would be the first homegrown big time prospect. And I say homegrown, he hadn't played an inning in the minor league system yet. But you know, if he were to go down to the minors, or if he were to make the opening day roster, then he would be the first in a series of, I'll call them big-time prospects the Astros have had in the building, that would be that they wouldn't be manipulating his service time. Like every other guy, going all the way back to Jose Altuve, you know, but George Springer, Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman, others along the way, Kyle Tucker, had their playing time kind of, you know, jiggered with to get that extra year of arbitration out of it. You bring Cam Smith up early like that. Now, they've created a rule to incentivize teams with prospects the level of Cam Smith to, if they deserve to be on the opening day roster, put them on the opening day roster, because if he finishes, I forget where it is, but if he finishes way high up in rookie of the year or MVP and stuff like that in his rookie year, or with MVP, it's over the next few years. If he finishes way high up in those votings, then they can get some draft compensation out of it.
That was a good – Chandler Rome first pointed that out. Really, I think after the Cam Smith fervor started taking off, and explained it in a way that I hadn't seen it before. So it does it's a disincentive to hold him down in the minors.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not a huge disincentive, because he does also still has to prove it.
Well, if he's on the team for opening day, then the Astros clearly think he's going to be one of the two or three best rookies in baseball this year.
Yeah,
you know, if they're doing that, just based on what their track record is with big time prospects like that. So Chandler Rome has a bunch of scuttlebutt about the Astros over the weekend. A lot of some of it is roster related. Feels like, Seth, it sounds like to Chandler that there's a slight chance that Chaz McCormick's spot could be in jeopardy just based on the fact that he's not hitting this spring. You know, maybe it's Chaz's spot DeZenzo gets, but they want DeZenzo and Cam Smith to play every day, regardless of what level they're on. I feel like there's six guys right now that are battling for four roster spots. It's DeZenzo and Cam Smith, who I don't think both of them will be on this team. I think one will. And then it's Hummel, it's Chaz, it's Brendan Rodgers, and it's Zach Short. So we'll see what happens. Those six, and then the pitching staff is pretty much set. They're like, now, you know, their last reliever is what they're deciding on. And the other big thing, just in looking at this roster, man, other than Framber, this is a roster full of guys that are going to be with this team for at least, at a minimum, 2 or 3 years, if not 5 or 6 years. Like, this is a core group that's going to be here by baseball standards for a little while, you know?
Well, I guess looking at the pitching staff overall.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess in my mind I was going to the relievers, because that's the one that's more in doubt or what have you.
Yeah, I'm talking about the main guys on the team overall.
I guess, yeah, but it's a big – that Framber's a big one. The Framber one is one where you feel like, okay, that's your guy. That's the guy that's been an innings eater forever and just remarkably consistent since his younger years. But that, I guess when I think about the sum total of the pitching staff, that's where having control over a bunch of the starters for multiple more years, I still look at a relief staff where you're trying to figure out exactly who it's going to be and how they're going
to
look.
Yeah. Like to me, like Chandler says this in his piece, he talks about Framber and says no extension offer for Framber Valdez this spring. And Framber, I guess in an interview through the interpreter, said that he expects to hit the market after the season. He's going to be a free agent, which, yeah, that makes sense. They're not offering you a contract. Chandler cites Hunter Brown's development as something that kind of cushions the blow of potentially losing Framber. For me, that's not enough. If you're going to continue to compete, for me, the thing that cushions the blow of losing Framber, like, it's almost like Hunter Brown is almost the cover charge to feel okay about life after Framber Valdez. To me, it's the key is either Spencer Arrighetti or Hayden Wisniewski or somebody like that.
Right. Yeah.
Taking a stranglehold on the number three job to be the number two next year.
Yeah. If you want to have a championship caliber pitching staff, losing Framber, it doesn't change anything. Still having Hunter Brown on there.
Yeah.
You've lost a genuine stud the head of the lineup. So okay, Hunter Brown might become that guy, but you got four other spots you have to worry about. Yeah. Arrighetti, I think, is the one that, you know, given the Astros' ability to develop guys like, say, Hunter Brown. I think Arrighetti, and then I don't know. There's just still a part of me that, hey, J.P. France is off there somewhere rehabbing.
I love J.P. France.
Somewhere in the darkness. I've still got a candle lit for J.P. France, damn it.
J.P. France and his rec specs.
You mark my words, Sean. Mm-hmm. 2 years from now, you're going to be out here claiming like, I always knew J.P. France was going to be a Cy Young Award winner. Damn it.
Hey, are you shifting gears here? I know you saw this. I had not seen this until yesterday. You said this guy was out here. He's been out here for a while. I had not seen this until the video surfaced of this CJ Stroud impersonator.
Yeah.
Getting into the rodeo for free.
People waving them through security.
Taking pictures with him.
The kid looks a lot like CJ Stroud and tries at it. Has the hair exactly done like it. I've seen videos of him before at restaurants and stuff, where people are treating him like he's CJ Stroud. And I don't know what's to be done about it. I don't know legally how much you can do.
I don't either.
But I feel it's one thing to look a lot like somebody. It's another to knowingly benefit from that guy's image.
To lie and say you're him.
And say you're him, yeah. That's got to be a crime, right? I mean, that's one thing. Obviously, you were cashing a check or something. That's
right.
A big-time crime. Remember that guy that pretended he was Ben Roethlisberger a few years back?
I don't.
He was dating a woman who he had convinced this woman and her family that he was Ben Roethlisberger.
No way.
And got into some kind of a pinch and just needed her to forward him, you know, loan him $50,000 or something like that. He was duping.
Okay.
He duped a hardware store out of the free stuff. This kid's got to stop. This kid's got to stop. It's not right, man.
No.
It's not right.
No, it's messed up.
Because all it takes is being rude to one person in an establishment or something, and all of a sudden you're besmirching the good name of CJ Stroud.
It's messed up, and I'm just basing my entire assessment of it on this video. But not only is the hair the same, the face is very similar. He's even got the mannerisms down, like the way the bounce he has in his step when he walks and things like that.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm guessing there's a huge conversation going on with security over at NRG Stadium today.
And I'll tell you what, though. This is a game
they let him in for free. They let him in.
Game recognized
the game.
There's an element here where this is a masterful manipulation of white guilt, of being the white person. It's like, of course I recognize this person exactly for who he is. No, I'm not. What are you accusing me of? No.
Yeah. Oh, he looks a lot like CJ Stroud, man.
Oh, does he, Sean?
He
looks a lot like CJ Stroud, does he?
Yeah, he looks
a
lot. I ain't scared.
I see the type of guy you are.
I ain't scared. He looks a lot like CJ Stroud. It is messed up, though, dude. Especially when he started taking pictures with people, I'm like, all right, arrest this man. I don't know what for, but arrest this man.
Is he? I guess the question is, does he present himself as an impersonator or something? Does he disclose to everybody at some point, like, no, I'm not CJ Stroud?
Or do the words "I'm CJ Stroud" ever actually come out of his mouth? Or does he just go, oh, they want to pose with me for a picture? Sure. Here's the thing that should have been snuffed out with this particular incident about this guy getting into the rodeo for free.
Yeah.
He was wearing a CJ Stroud jersey. Do you think CJ, like, where,
well,
around town?
If he was doing an appearance,
maybe.
Then he might,
maybe.
Like he's showing up and he's supposed to do an appearance as CJ Stroud. Because, of course, you know, because I'm CJ Stroud. Why would you say I'm not CJ Stroud? Of course I'm CJ Stroud.
Right.
Weird question to ask.
It was wild, man. It was that was crazy. More speeding ticket stories coming in as well. I got a speeding ticket going 110 in a 70 back to college. No license, driving a stick shift that nobody else in the car knew how to drive. The officer was about to be off the shift, so he only gave me a ticket. He didn't arrest me. Drove the rest of the way going 60. Okay, we'll see. So it worked. It slowed you down a little bit. From what I can gather, Seth, to me, the big key, if you're going to either get a lighter punishment or maybe get out of the ticket altogether,
yeah,
make sure you catch a cop who's at the end of his shift.
The cop
just wants to go home. He's like, fine, here's the ticket or here's a warning.
I'm going to familiarize myself with the shift schedule of every local police department and then just fly through.
That's right.
5 minutes before the end of all of their shifts.
Yeah.
That does happen. That's happened to me before where you see a cop, you're speeding, and you freak out, and then you realize that they're turning into the police station. And then there's two parts of that. It's like, wow, I am an idiot. I was just speeding past the police station. But then you also realize, oh, this guy's at the end of his shift. He doesn't give a damn.
Yeah.
He just wants to get home to his wife who he hates.
Yeah. Text message, 30,000 plus volunteers get into NRG for the rodeo. Who cares? It's not that he got into the rodeo for free, although I'm guessing a security-based conversation is being had about that. Like,
yeah.
Don't just let guys in, even CJ Stroud, for free. But it's not that. It's the guy is impersonating CJ Stroud.
I don't understand how somebody got that wrong.
Right.
That person thought that we were worried about the rodeo not getting the admission fees. No. That was not our complaint with it.
It's
okay?
Like somebody...
Never once did Sean stand up and say, this man is robbing the taxpayer.
Right.
That's who he's robbing.
Right.
Because we support the rodeo. And now they... It's as if
somebody, Seth, jaywalked to go shoot somebody. And the person's like, why are you so concerned about jaywalking?
Yeah, like, we're concerned about impersonating CJ Stroud.
About the murder, man. Yeah.
I did this when I was playing in Jacksonville. I've told you this before. There was a bartender I knew, and I walked into this bar once, and he said, Seth, I had to kick a guy out the other night because he was telling people he was you. And he looked enough like me.
You've told this story before.
This is before people had internet on their phones and everything, could fact check anybody. But he was like hitting on girls and stuff, telling them that he was me.
That's messed up.
And so the bartender didn't know anything other than he kicked him out for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, that guy was probably doing that all over town. He might have had an entire family or something built up around the lie that he was me.
Now, what if he forged a good reputation for you? What if he was
That'd
like,
be pretty cool.
Quite, but the, I think quite the swordsman out there. You
yeah,
know I, mean?
I think it's... I don't know, because it ended up being, it was kind of an issue, but it was only for a brief period of time. But there was somebody that also came up to me that was at a autograph signing event, and it was like, hey, yeah, you're going out with my friend, such and such, a woman. And she just can't, you know, she says you're awesome. And I'm like, I have no idea who you're talking
Holy
about.
Holy cow.
What you're
That's
like.
Wild.
And he was really confused, and then he walked away, and I'm like, this is the same guy. There's some guy out there who's actually like going out with some girl and claiming that he's me.
That would stress me out so much, man.
Apparently he was treating that woman well, but who knows what kind of promises he was telling her, you know?
Yeah,
like, he's probably making all kinds of grandiose promises.
Oh, yeah.
Probably saying things like absurd things like, oh, yeah, I'm planning to have 15 sacks next year.
You have 10 women waiting for will call tickets outside the stadium right now. What's going on?
Oh.
All right. From Cam Smith over to the other Cam Robinson.
There's some 20-year-old kid in Jacksonville right now who thinks that his dad is deadbeat Seth Payne.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, that bum. That bum left my mom with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He's got me on a list of people to kill.
Because Arya Stark.
Because it wasn't even me.
Yeah.
And I was in Miami with my new beach house.
Yeah.
Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
Okay.
I dated her for a fortnight.
according to people in Jacksonville. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Speaking of the Jags, Cam Robinson used to play there. Seth did some study on the... odds on favorite to be the left tackle for the Texans. Do we feel better, worse, or about the same as their solution at left tackle as we felt on Friday? We'll get Seth's take on that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Multiple texters wondering if Case Keenum rolls around town saying that he's you. because you guys have similar facial features.
Yeah, Case Keenum, I get that a lot. People, it never gets annoying when people say, hey, you look like Case Keenum. Like, yeah, thanks. That's never heard that. You're the first person in 50 years that's that's ever noticed that. Ed Helms, I don't get Ed Helms as much anymore. Mm. I look more like Ed Helms, the dentist from The Hangover,
yeah,
than I look like Case Keenum.
I agree.
But I think just because of being in Houston, Case is obviously a lot more visible these days.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I don't look as much like John Rocker anymore. I looked like Cushing for a while. But it wasn't, that wasn't ever a big deal. That was easy enough to, usually it would be, you know when it would be, we'd be in a football setting or something, and where it kind of sucked was like, this was well after my career was over, but I might be at a Texan something, and somebody would come up all excited that it was Cushing.
You thought it was Cushing, yeah.
Yeah. You know the dumbest one ever? This will tell you how dumb Patriots fans are, what hop on BS craps they are. I emceed... I had to MC an event before the Patriots played in the Super Bowl in Houston. I say I had to. They paid me money to do something that I never should have done, but I accepted the money because it was a Patriots pep rally.
Yeah.
So it was like this former non-Patriots player MCing a pep rally.
Yeah.
People hated me.
They had to be super stoked about that. Yeah.
They hated me. They couldn't get me, but it was a big chunk of money. So I was like, I'll take your money to be hated by a bunch of people I already hate for a while. But I'm standing around waiting before the event began, and some guy came up to me just eyes wide open, and it was like, hey, man, listen, like, you know, it's cool. Like, don't worry. I won't make a big deal out of it, but can I take my picture with you? And I'm like, he's all Patriots gear and everything, and he was excited, really, really excited. And I was like, hey, this feels kind of awkward, but, like, who do you think I am? And he goes, you're Gronk. I'm like, what the hell are you talking? What? And this guy, it wasn't like if he was a short guy, I might consider like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm a really tall guy compared to him, and he's looking up at me so he doesn't get perspective or something. And I don't look, I don't look anything like Gronk. So I took the picture with him.
Of course. Oh, yeah, did you?
No.
Oh, so you?
No,
didn't...
I didn't. No. I told him I wasn't Gronk. how the hell are you a Patriots fan at the Super Bowl and confuse me for Gronk?
No kidding.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
You must have been in pretty good shape at that time, because Gronk.
Yeah, but it didn't make me 3 inches taller.
Yeah.
There's
a
big difference between 6'6", 6'7", and 6'4".
How tall he is? He's that tall, huh? Gronk.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him at the Super Bowl. We saw him at the Super Bowl, and I thought it was a basketball player at first.
Yeah. All right, so you watched some Cam Robinson this weekend. You did the chores for all of us here, Seth. You saved us all from watching Cam Robinson with a far more educated eye than many of us to tell us, should we feel better, worse, or about the same as the player that I think is barring something health-wise, I think he's a heavy favorite to be the starting left tackle for this team right now.
Yeah, I think that, when they first signed him, I thought, all right, it's still maybe going to be a competitive situation at offensive tackle in general, and that it would be a three-man competition between Cam Robinson, Titus Howard, and Blake Fisher, and just maybe shuffle things around depending on what happened. It makes a lot more sense that, yeah, Cam Robinson's going to be the starting left tackle. Opening game. Maybe at some point they shift things around. But like, by and large, he's been a solid left tackle in the NFL. I think there's something with Cam Robinson where he hasn't necessarily lived up to expectations. So much like it is with Titus Howard here, you end up with a more negative perception of him than you probably should have. I mean, with Titus, I agree that I feel like he's capable of being a better right tackle than he's been. But I do think some people look at his work at left guard and think that they tie that somehow to his performance at right tackle. He's a much better right tackle than he is a left guard. But with Cam Robinson, he's very, very... He's absolutely fine in pass protection. He's got long arms. He uses them well. If you've heard that Clint Sterner promo, I think Clint's exactly right on that. The biggest weakness in the thing that reminds you a little bit of Laremy Tunsil is that he's not much of a run blocker. And that where he's not as good as Laremy Tunsil is in pass protection is that he doesn't hold up to power as well. If I'm turning that into a positive, at least in terms of, okay, swarm mentality, when I watched Cam Robinson and I watched him more closely than I've watched him just, you know, in Texans games and everything, I think that he's willing as a run blocker. It's just that he lacks natural power and strength, both as a pass protector and as a run blocker, to where he's very willing. It's just there's sometimes where he can't, that stronger guys overpower him. But there's a lot of instances of him just keeping his legs churning on double teams and driving guys into the ground and all of that stuff. I think that he's probably just at his limit for what he can do as a run blocker. But is a sum total, all right, are we okay at left tackle? Yeah, as long as Cam Robinson is healthy, I feel good enough about him at left tackle. I don't think it's not the pessimism that I saw from a lot of people. And, oh, you're replacing Laremy Tunsil with him? Great. No, you've got to get the other four guys better. But the Cam Robinson will be fine as long as you can get the other four positions straight.
Is he swarmy?
Yeah, I think he is swarmy. I think he's swarmy. But I think there's a ceiling as to how much you can expect from that in the
run
game.
Sure. Did the decision on Titus Howard and Blake Fisher and all the moving parts that go with that, and again, I'm asking this question knowing full well they could draft somebody that changes the calculus on the line again with the 25th overall pick, or maybe they even move up to get somebody in the draft that they view as a day one starter. But as currently constructed, if this is the offensive line, do they need to make the decision on where Titus is going to be before, like, OTAs? I mean, like, is it beneficial to Titus if he knows he's going to be right tackle? You're the right, like, how hard is that to make that shift if they feel like halfway through training camp, like, oh, no, we got to put him back at guard?
I think at this point, the biggest difference just needs to be that, as it was this last year, for the first time, when they did move Titus Howard to left guard, he seemed like he embraced it. Yeah. And he had never really seemed like he embraced it. Now, he didn't embrace it fully. At the very beginning, he was still adamant that, no, I am a right tackle. But I think that he showed that he was actually willing to... I mean, it felt like before last season when he would go to left guard, it was almost like there was a psychological barrier where he didn't want to play too well because then people would think he was guard and not a tackle.
Yeah.
I think maybe he's matured beyond that. So ideally, it depends on what happens in the draft. If you draft an offensive lineman that you think is potentially a left guard, then you're probably going to give it. You're going to make it a competition between that offensive lineman and Laken Tomlinson, perhaps. But regardless of everything else, I think that opening day. I guess what's your question? I'm struggling with it in a way.
I'm just wondering, like, if Titus Howard is going to be the right tackle, is this something they've got to commit to, and he's at tackle
no,
for the coming season?
They don't have to, but I think that they still look at Blake Fisher as a guy that's a developing offensive lineman and that he can be the swing tackle.
Yeah.
I think in an ideal world, they draft an interior offensive lineman, maybe two, who knows, and that there's open competition at the interior offensive line. And they start off the season seeing how it goes with Titus Howard at right tackle, with Cam Robinson at left tackle, knowing that they can put Titus Howard in at guard if they have to.
Yeah, I probably worded it poorly. That's my thing. Like, it doesn't feel ideal that halfway through training camp and they look at the whole situation and go, all right, now you're a guard. But they've done it with him three other times, so.
Yeah, maybe that's why I was flummoxed a little bit, because I guess my short answer should have been no, I don't think they worry about that as much. Because this isn't like moving Jose Altuve to left field.
Yeah.
I think Titus has been there plenty of times where he has the experience that they probably – With a new offensive coordinator especially, they probably want Titus Howard to get as many reps at right tackle as possible. If they have to, I think they'd feel fine with Laken Tomlinson at left guard. I'm not sure exactly how they feel about Ed Ingram at right guard, but I think they're going to be trying to find the right three guys on the interior more so than they're going to want to see that they need to spend time with Titus in there at left guard.
All right, Payne and Pendergast.
That's my gut at this point, but we'll see after the draft.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Did the NCAA tournament, which is probably the biggest event going on right now the next couple weeks, Did they lose its best villain yesterday? Did they lose the most hated person in the tournament yesterday? We will, and I can't imagine this person if he'd taken the job he was offered earlier this year. We'll talk about that. Final segment. We'll find out what the guys got going on In the Loop coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Damn, Rockets, missed opportunity. I'm looking up at the screen in the studio. And the big question, how many teams are you taking over the Nuggets in the Western Conference? Steve, you just beat them last night.
Yeah.
And the big story is how you have a stranglehold on the number two seed. But no, you let them up. You let them beat you at home last night, and now the Nuggets are a big talk on these blah, blah, blah shows this morning on TV.
Yappity-yap.
The yappers, the chin-waggers, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, no respect.
Mm-mm.
No damn respect, I'll tell you.
Nope.
No credit given for the fact that, it's going to be fun, man. This is going to be a fun, the playoffs, regardless of where the Rockets are seated, there's a lot. I mean, you go down to the 9 seed with the Kings, and for whatever reason, the Rockets have had their issues and struggles against the Kings this year. The fact that the Lakers are annoyingly the 4 seed, that and very put out by the fact that the Rockets and the Nuggets are seated above them. No matter what the actual simple math would tell you, they feel disrespected that the actual regular season record seems to matter.
Dude, yeah. They're going to catch an opponent that's going to be really fun in the first round. You know, it could be. I doubt it'll be the Lakers, but the Lakers are not playing good basketball. They're the 4 seed right now. A series with Memphis would be fun. A series with Golden State would be a hell of a lot of fun. The teams that would be in the play-in right now would be Minnesota, the Clippers, Sacramento, and Phoenix. You know, so the two would play the 7 seed. So whoever comes as the best team out of the play-in would be who you'd be catching there. Like the play-in would be must-watch right now if you're a Rockets fan as the 2 seed. You know?
You know what they need to do? I think it's pretty obvious. They need to beat Kevin Durant in the playoffs because Kevin Durant will gladly just hop on with the team that forced him out the year before. That's what he loves to do.
That's true.
We don't need to be better than the Rockets.
No.
I'm just going to join the Rockets.
That's
just like I did with the Warriors back in the
That's
day.
That's his go-to move,
This is the franchise. The franchise hinges not on how deep the Rockets can go into the playoffs, but can they defeat Kevin Durant in the playoffs to where Durant says, all right, that's it.
Dream team.
Can't beat them, join them.
Yep. A lot of smoke around that right now, man. A lot of smoke around Durant wanting to come here. It seems like it's a done deal that he's not going to be in Phoenix next year. Is what it feels like.
I'll forgive him. I'll forgive him for saying that this is my city that one time 7 or 8 years ago. If he ends up coming in and genuinely making it his city,
Man. Whatever. If it makes him better, I'm down for it. So the NCAA tournament, we're on to the Sweet 16, and I guess my question would be, has the tournament lost its biggest villain? People do not like Danny Hurley of UConn. He is a cocky heel, is what he is. He is somebody that does not mind reminding opposing crowds that he is a two-time champion. We've seen video of that. There was footage of him leaving the floor yesterday after UConn gave Florida all they could handle yesterday. That game was tied pretty late in the game. And then Clayton from Florida just started knocking down threes, and that was that. But UConn put up a really good fight in that game. And Hurley was caught coming into the tunnel by a camera, walking off the court with his players, kind of turning around and yelling to some Baylor people, like, hope the referees don't bleep you like they bleeped us. You know, that's kind of how it sounded, like he was away from the mic. He is ornery. He is... You know, he's a very good coach, but he's very testy. He does not handle losing well. This is an absolutely miserable Danny Hurley. And picture him sitting there at the dais there, rubbing his face, head in his hands, like he just looks miserable. Here's Hurley after yesterday's loss.
Just get back to, myself as a coach and not have to throw out first pitches. And you should only be ringing stock market bells and throwing out first pitches when you win the major championship. So, I won't have to do things like that. I'll be able to just kind of, focus on the upcoming season, make better decisions with all aspects of coaching. But, when I saw You know, when I was asked about the 13 in a row, you had no idea the company and what we've accomplished. So you could take some solace in that. But today was to be that close to get into a Sweet 16 and knowing, you know, that the 2 seed lost yesterday and this bracket could have really opened up for us. And we knew that going in once we saw the 2 seed lose.
Okay. People really enjoyed seeing Danny Hurley miserable yesterday, was the sense I got. Yeah. The 13,
I think it would annoy you because it would be more people that also say, look at how much the guy cares. That's what basketball is all about.
He does care. Honestly, the biggest question I had in watching Hurley operate, really in like watching him operate on the sideline, obviously, but in these press conferences after the tournament, he got offered the Lakers job. He turned down the Lakers head coaching job, Danny Hurley did, before J.J. Redick ended up getting that Lakers job. And that's what I think Danny Hurley would have been back in college in a year.
Yeah.
There is no way that a guy that's wound that tight, that has no in between. Like when they lose, it's the worst thing in the world. When they win, he's on top of the world and he's obnoxious about it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how that, and especially in a world where LeBron James operates in that same
world. Like, and with Bronny, the whole dynamic there, would Patino have handled, how would he have handled all of that?
Early, yeah.
And yeah, that would have been fun to watch.
Yeah.
I think that we should, I hope he's so miserable that he needs to take a high profile NBA job so he can step away from having to cry all the time.
Yeah.
Tell me this. Okay, so Arkansas faced St. John's.
Yeah.
And it was John Calipari versus Rick Pitino.
Yeah.
And Calipari was wearing this kind of like picnic table cloth looking blazer. One person tweeted out that, and it's got like kind of tossed around like it was fact. They basically said that he's wearing a jacket made from the tablecloth at the restaurant where Rick Pitino got in trouble for having relations with one of his assistant coaches' fiancés back in the day.
Yeah.
Has there been any confirmation or anything that was indeed Calipari's intent as he faced his long rival Rick Pitino?
No,
or not?
No, I've seen no confirmation of the sort. I love the idea. I love the narrative.
I think the problem was, I think it, like this tablecloth, it's the red and white, almost like a houndstooth, like a Bear Bryant type thing.
Yeah.
That would, and you know, and it's Arkansas, you could totally see how it's Arkansas colors and everything. I feel like the restaurant that Pitino got busted in was more of a white tablecloth type of place.
No, it's not.
It wasn't a mom and pop Italian restaurant.
It's a regular Italian restaurant where you might see tablecloths. I've been there. I've eaten
it's
there.
It's not a fancy place.
It's not a fancy place.
Oh, okay.
It's nice. So it's nice.
So it could totally have a red and white tablecloth.
It could. Yeah. Like it's one of those. I mean, I visited it back in 2008 when I was driving through Louisville. I was driving up to go see my kids in the summertime.
Yeah.
Up in Chicago. And so I stopped in Louisville, and that's kind of how I'm wired. I'm like, oh, I want to go to the restaurant that got Rick Pitino fired, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if it got him fired, but it got him in trouble.
Did they have the table pointed out or anything? Did you ask the waitstaff?
I asked.
Like, hey,
they did. They told me which table it was. I don't know if they were being truthful or not, but I took my picture next to it. And
yeah.
I didn't ask to eat at it. I was like, oh, I don't know. That's
of all the tables in the restaurant where it would be the most romantic or intriguing to have relations on top of, was that the one?
No, middle of the road. But from what I understand, he was in there after hours. So
it was after hours.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been something if he was doing it during dining hours in there.
Definitely. And you'd know for sure because somebody would have caught it on their phone.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So, no, I've been there. It's because the restaurant's called Porcini's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's right there in Louisville.
Sounds pretty Italian.
Yeah, it's very Italian. It's not like tippy top, like white glove, white tablecloth, but it's good. It's, you know, moderately pricey.
Yeah.
Good meal. I liked it, you know, and I got to say I ate at the place that Rick Pitino chose to, you know the old saying, you don't bleep where you eat.
Potentially kill his career.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it didn't kill his career. It gave it a little bit of a setback.
I'm fine now. He killed my bracket is what he did.
Yeah.
I had St. John's winning the whole thing, so now I've got to be doing this thing where I root for all my other Final Four teams to make it, and I got to root for Calipari to plow through everybody because nobody took Arkansas. The only one who would even be a threat to take Arkansas would be Clint in our brackets. John Lopez is here. Did your weekend continue on the great run that you were on after day one of the tournament?
Good, not great. Still in the hunt. I think top three.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Something like that. I'll have to look.
Yeah, my champion is out. I'm just not feeling too good about my chances right now.
By the way, you eating at that restaurant was a 1 to 700 favorite.
Oh, yeah.
It was a,
man. I thought about writing a book about places like that in the sports world, like infamous places that you could go visit and like interview people who like
great tour guide to it. A guide to those,
an
99 restaurants you should dine in before you.
That a sports Absolutely. Fan should dine in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, based on scandals or whatnot.
Yeah, something noteworthy.
Well, no, but you also like the Sopranos. You went to the Sopranos restaurant where they filmed the final scene.
Olston's. I sat in the booth. Yeah.
Did you go to the Seinfeld diner?
The diner.
I've been to that
The diner in New York. Yeah. Amy and I love stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the actual diner. Obviously, like that was a set
it's
on
called
Hollywood.
Something else,
it's called Tom. It's called Tom's Restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. Luke Morrow's here. He's a Northeast guy. He would know. Luke, it's Tom's Restaurant.
Yeah,
right?
Tom's Restaurant. Yeah.
So, yeah, man. Okay,
I'm trying to think of one that you may not
writing
have
that down
at.
On my to do list for today.
Dude, there's a series on Netflix right now where it's a documentary about when they took down the five mob bosses in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing there is just the killings of the mob bosses and stuff in some of these restaurants, these little mob. But like the New York in the 1980s. Just how nuts it was, how much control organized crime had over not just the city, but like major industries. I honestly didn't understand the depth to which the mob controlled various industries, like the concrete industry and stuff like that, because they controlled the unions.
This is on Netflix right now?
Yeah. It's really good.
There's too much stuff on Netflix right now. Just started on
too much quality. That's America
content.
Sucks. There's just too much quality content
much quality
for me to
content.
Sit on my couch and
that's
watch.
That's why we're here put out some mediocre content.
Back in the old days, I could sit and never find anything good on TV, and now I spend 45 minutes trying to figure out what to watch because there's too much good
too
stuff.
Too much stuff. That's exactly.
Well, that's the truth.
Yes.
I thought of one.
Yeah.
I thought of a restaurant.
Oh, by the way, Spark Steakhouse, Seth, as I'm sure is in that documentary. That's where Castellano got shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he'd
right out
there.
In front of it, right?
Yep. Yeah.
This may or may not be in your wheelhouse. Are you a fan of that new series that's been around called The Bear?
No,
I can't watch that.
Really?
That's an uncut
wild.
Gems of the culinary world. I know.
Mr. Beef in Chicago is what it's based on.
Mr. Beef? No, okay. I lived in Chicago. Never ate at Mr. Beef.
Yeah.
Is it an Italian beef place?
Italian beef place.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a stressful show, Sean.
It's so stressful.
Well, it's very stressful.
It's awesome.
It feels like you own a restaurant.
Oh, okay.
It's awesome.
Is it a drama? Is it a true
It's a drama,
story?
Comedy, or a dramatic comedy, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
But I actually know someone who worked at a restaurant like that with some of the people that were inspired for the show.
Okay.
And they said 100%. Accurate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give me the.
John, he's this guy. He's taken over his family restaurant, but it's always been kind of like this little family neighborhood joint. But he's like a gifted chef, and he's taking it over, and he's trying to change and everything. But it's all this like trying to deal with like finding the food that you're gonna make the menu out of in the morning, and like people don't show up, and all these things that restaurant owners deal with.
Yeah. I don't know. I look around. I'm like, how are their restaurant owners?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I look at that type of business. I'm like, man, it takes a special kind of person. The amount of turnover, you know.
If you're looking for a show to binge, The Bear is really good.
The Bear.
It's very stressful, as Seth said. But
The Bear.
It's too stressful for me. I don't like movies like that. Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler, that was just way too stressful. It took me like 5 attempts to make it halfway
through. Dude, you and me both. Mm-hmm. That was brutal.
Mm-hmm. There's a movie out right now about the first episode of Saturday Night Live where it follows like Lorne Michaels trying to get everything together.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't finished that one yet either. It's too stressful.
Really?
Too stressful, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are these just super stressful movies, or have you started, Seth, to build up my kind of a lower affinity to inject that kind of stress into your
No, life? They're intended to be stressful for the viewer.
Yeah. Okay, got
well,
it.
It's a like, series.
Yeah. It's almost like it's kind of like with cringe comedy, like the ones that are supposed to make you cringe. Like I don't have a good tolerance for those. There's a certain genre of like, no, it's this main character is under stress and we're going to make you feel how stressed out he is. And it's like John said, it's probably the people that can handle that kind of stress.
Yeah.
The people that actually could watch that movie are the people that are much likely going to be better restaurant managers than
you. Yeah. I'm going to pop. Put it to the test. It's really good. It's
very
stressful,
very
but it's really good.
Okay.
I just, he's the guy.
It was the guy from the movie about the wrestlers, the Texas wrestling family.
Oh, Zac Efron?
No, the other
one. No.
The Von Erichs. The Von Erichs.
Yeah, but the guy that played the one of the brothers there.
Oh, I don't remember. Character. Yeah, I only remember Zac Efron. Yeah. All right. Hey,
the
Luke.
The non-Zac Efron one.
Jeremy Allen White.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
He's in Shameless as well.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
The guy in that movie, the wrestling movie, that looked like he trained his upper body 4 hours a day and didn't do a single lower body exercise.
Chicken legs.
Yeah.
How you doing, Luke?
Doing well. It's good to be here.
Yeah, man.
And, exciting time because obviously March Madness is off and running, and that was started last Thursday. Now this Thursday we have opening day in baseball, so this is a great stretch of Thursdays.
Good week to be alive.
Well, no technically, doubt. Major League Baseball already had their opening day.
Yeah, that's true.
That's an excellent actually. That's a good one.
Yeah, nothing like a 3 a.m. first pitch for your local fans.
To follow it on our phones while we're doing radio. It was great. Yeah, it was great. All right, well, good. Well, Luke Morrow in for Reggie Adetula. John Lopez in. Figgy is here. So they are in the loop. Seth, antibodies to you, man.
Antibodies, and damn it, today's the day I'm going to finish Uncut Gems. I'm going to do it. I'm going to power through.
Yeah. It's good stuff. All right, we're done. We are out of time.